And this hour, we're going to take your calls with Dr. Judith Orloff as we talk about empaths. If you're one or know one or came across one, check in with us. And welcome back. George Norrie with you, Dr. Judith Orloff. Judy, are presidents ever empaths? Have we ever had a leader that's an empath?
Oh, that's an amazing question. I wonder about Abraham Lincoln and how open he was, and he had a sense of his assassination.
Or Roosevelt, Delano Roosevelt.
Yeah, or Roosevelt. I believe that an empath would make an incredible president, one that can feel what's going on and have empathy for all sides, though not take it on, and just use that as part of their judgment and perceptions. I think it would be incredible.
It would be interesting, to be sure, if they would start wars or end them.
End them, definitely.
I'm going to take calls with Dr. Judith Orloff. When you deal with an empath, how do you first start? What do you do with them?
Well, first I give them the empath diagnostic test to see
just to make
much
sure
of an empath that they are. And this alone is an eye-opener for people because they've never considered being an empath. They didn't know what was happening. And so then, you know, I talk to them about what it's like, you know, for them to understand their perceptual abilities and really get a sense of how they perceive the world. And then I teach my patients how to enhance the gifts and how to deal with the challenges.
Has there ever been an empath who's just off the charts by being an empath?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Many empaths are off the charts and are suffering tremendously. And there are empaths who are housebound and just don't want to come out anymore because it's too much energy, it's too much overwhelm outside, and so they just stay home. And so that's a choice. And I know many empaths prefer staying more at home. But, you know, then again, there's a balanced life. And how do you balance being out, especially in nature, or empaths love being with one or two people rather than large groups. And so how can you create a life that really supports your sensitivities, at the same time take good care of yourself?
That's right.
And quiet down when you need to.
Let's go to the phones. Thomas in La Jolla, California. Welcome to the program. Hi, Thomas.
Hi, George. Thank you. It is a pleasure, Dr. Orloff. I have a comment and then a question, Judith. The comment is emotional support animals. And it seems like people who work with not just dogs and cats, but maybe with raptors, you know, like falcons, or they swim with dolphins, or they ride horses, you know, and raise horses. And I was wondering if you had personal experiences, perhaps personal coaching with empaths and working with animals. If you have any great animal stories, that would be wonderful.
It's animal empaths are very common. I've worked with so many animal empaths. And now I believe that I am one myself, maybe not as strongly as some of them, but I have a deep love for animals, and I've swam with the dolphins and know what that's like to communicate intuitively with dolphins and feel their tremendous, tremendous love and tremendous compassion that the dolphins have. And so it's possible as an empath, and I assume the reason you're asking this is because you're an animal empath and you adore animals. But there are all kinds of forms of communication with animals, all kinds of deep love that you could experience in communication.
Interesting take on that. And I would guess most empaths are animal lovers, if not all of them.
Oh, yes. I can't say all, but it's very common that empaths love animals. They love nature. They love the hummingbirds and the butterflies and all of the creatures and the canyons. And everything. So empaths and animals kind of go together.
Would you say that Hitler might have been a narcissist?
I think there's a good chance.
Slam dunk, right?
I suspect so.
I think he was also insane.
Yeah, probably. Probably insane. But an empath, it's hard for them to hurt anything. You know, it's they feel the pain more than the other person.
Right.
So it's empaths aren't built to do those kinds of
things. Well, now, are you an empath if you support the death penalty?
I suppose you could be. You know, it depends on your views with that. Empaths don't usually like killing anything. And so they'll always find some way to love something or try to heal it or give them the benefit of the doubt. It just depends. Just in general, empaths are very peace-loving, and they don't want to hurt anything.
But if they support the death penalty, what does that mean?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I can't speak for all empaths out there. I mean, I try and hold room for other points of view.
That would be an interesting study to interview empaths and ask them that specific question. Do you support the death penalty?
But that scene in Dead Man Walking, I don't know if you ever saw
it. Oh, yeah.
That last scene where, you know, they're connecting with their eyes and he's feeling redemption and he's opened his heart to her and trust her. You know, that's an empathic moment.
And did you see The Green Mile?
I did.
That's another classic.
Oh, another classic. Yes. So empaths and empathy can, it happens all over the place. And sometimes someone's great love can open that up in you when you were shut down. And then suddenly you become more open to that empathy as well.
Let's go to Monica in Oregon. Welcome to the show. Hi, Monica.
How are you guys doing tonight?
We're doing great.
Hi, how are you?
Very well. How about yourself?
Good. Yeah, so I have, I've got like a comment, a question, and a comment, and I feel like I'm over the charts because of all the things and whatnot. So first of all, like my comment, I have been in the healthcare industry for 20 years. Off and on, and have had people, needy people, well, I need you for this, and I need you for that. Plus, I have been in an abusive marriage in the past, and I use guilt trips and all that kind of thing, you know, to tug at my heartstrings. So I suppose it could be, you know, another really hardcore learning curve. Right now, my question, right now, the state I'm in is, right now, I tend to want to just stay at home. I don't like going out because it's just too overwhelming. I never know what's going to happen. You know, it's just, it's ridiculous. I'm almost just in fear of the world, everything like that. And my final comment, and just to save time because, you know, I'm empathetic.
Well, I didn't hear a question. I didn't hear a question out of that, though.
Oh, I apologize.
That's all right.
Yeah, my question, I think she answered part of it, but is it normal for an empath to, you know, like, understand?
Hibernate?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, is it, Judith?
Oh, it's very common. And there's a tendency when you get overwhelmed or you have too much trauma that you just want to withdraw from the world and just be away from everything because it's all too intense. And I understand that. And it, you feel like such an empath to me. Your heart feels so open. You're such a giver. And you've been hurt. And so, of course, there's a tendency to want to withdraw. But, you know, try it and not turn off life totally. Try and look up at the sky or breathe the air or go outside just for a few moments, so that you could connect with maybe not people, but with nature and with life itself. But don't lose your connection or just live out of fear and be a recluse. Come out a little bit and connect to everything. But I certainly understand the impulse that you're describing.
Judith, if you're not an empath and you're not a narcissist, what are you?
You're a human. You could put labels on people. But this is, you know, I only use the word empath as a way to understand a certain temperament. You know, I'm not that into labels myself. But it's, you know, we're all human beings. We're all here together. You know, some people are more sensitive than others. In relationships, for instance, if I'm in a relationship, in a romantic relationship, I don't want to be with another empath. I want to be with what I call a rock, somebody who's very grounded, very, and it's practical in the real world, but loving, but not taking on all the energies that I do, because two people would be too much. It'd be too much for me to have two of us. And so, you know, it's just a preference. But talking about empaths, it's just a way to identify your life experience and your gifts and the challenges involved as well.
Let's go to Lisa in Alpine, Utah, first-time caller. Hi, Lisa.
Hello, George and Dr. Judith.
Hi, Lisa.
Such a blessing. I feel like it's just for me. I just recently, after raising a large family, went back to school.
Good for you.
Degree. But I also realized during the course of my schooling that I am married to a narcissist. And when you were talking about all the qualities of an empath, I checked most of those boxes. And I have found that my health is really deteriorating. I've been with my husband for over 2 decades, and it's just taking its toll. I feel like I get my wings clipped all the time. I'm very tempted to be agoraphobic and stay home, very tempted to sell my home in the suburbs and live in a cabin in the mountains with a little firewood burning stove. I would like to know what I can do in my situation to keep myself healthy, and because I do, I feel Mother Earth. I feel my animals. I feel everything, and I just feel like it's really taking a toll on me, and I don't really know how to counterbalance that.
Yeah. I strongly suggest that you start meditating and get a sacred space at home that is away from your husband, just a place where you could have some candles and flowers and just a sacred place where you can sit and breathe and put your hand over your heart. And just begin to calm yourself and self-soothe. That's really important that you have that time away from your husband. And, you know, if he's a full-blown narcissist, to, you know, look to other people for the kind of love and nurturing that you deserve. But I intuitively feel that meditation would be very, very good for you. Even the 3-minute heart meditation that I describe, you know, in the book, to be able to just breathe, to focus on something you really love, and put your hand on your heart and just pat it, you know, in terms of self-soothing. If you need to raise your energy again.
Lisa, does that help you?
Yeah, I'm patting my heart as we speak.
Oh, that's wonderful, Lisa.
I want to be able to help other people, but I've got to get myself in a place where I can do that. And, I felt like it was just for me. You have articulated so beautifully what I've been feeling and not really understood. So thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Thank you. Next up, Joe, Long Island, New York. Hello, Joseph.
And Judith, and I just want to cite a movie also. My question would be conscious versus overly conscious, particularly pursuing a goal, whatever it might be, if you think about it too much. Or, for example, you mentioned Lincoln. I mean, he had to be conscious that he might have been assassinated potentially, but he couldn't really be overly conscious of that in function. And then I saw this movie at the Tribeca Film Festival, and it was about a Chinese woman that came home to Myanmar for her grandfather who was sick. Grandfather died, and she cried at the funeral. Nobody else did, really. So it showed her initially as an empath. Yeah. And then when she initially got the ride to see the grandfather, she met up with the motorcycle guy who was a farmer, and gave him a big tip. So it showed you that she had enough money. She had a rich husband in China. You never saw him in the movie. And then she decides, I can make a lot of money selling drugs. The movie showed that she hardened herself to do that. She went away from her empath self. And then she you know, got the other guy to drive her around to deliver the drugs, and she was delivering the drugs to an open-air restaurant, you know, an outdoor thing, and the sun hit her face, and he could see a look like, what am I doing? The early afternoon sun, and that was that old empath self that broke through, even though she had hardened herself. So that was really an interesting thing, an empath hardening yourself to do maybe the misdeeds.
Mm-hmm. That's so powerful, very powerful, the way you described that. You're a very good storyteller. But yeah, that's the empath self coming forth. You have to be true to the empath self. If you betray the empath self, only bad things will happen in terms of, you know, your path in life. You'll have a lot of pain, a lot of disturbances. But in terms of your first question, it's if you overthink something, you know, that will, it's like putting a death grip on it. You want to be able to use your reasoning mind and use your empathic heart. So both, but you don't want to overthink something because that will take the truth out of it. It's you're trying too hard. So it's a balance between thinking and feeling with your empathic heart, being able to do both.
Do most marriages end if you're married to a narcissist?
No, that's the problem. If they would just end, then it would be easier for us.
Really? Should they end?
If I have worked with a lot of people who are suffering in their marriages to narcissists, and unfortunately, they're very hard to break up with.
Who's more apt to be a narcissist, a man or a woman?
I think the statistics show that more men are narcissists, but there are plenty of women who are narcissists.
They are.
So, you know, but it's very hard to break up with one if you're married to one and you have children with them. Because it's narcissists, if you try and break up with them, they will reel you in by telling you exactly what you want to hear and, oh, I'll change. Oh, I love you.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, exactly. And then there you're off and rolling again. You're back in the relationship, and it might take a decade or two to get out. I mean, really, it's really hard to get out, but once they get out, and if they can do it pretty much cold turkey, because you can't just keep going back and forth with them, you have to do it cold turkey or minimal contact, then people can begin to renew their lives and begin again.
Does the narcissist go crazy when you go cold turkey and just cut them off?
No, not really. They try to get you back, but they'll go on to the next person.
They'll move on.
Yeah.
All right, Judith, we're going to come back with final phone calls with you in just a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM. We shall be right back. Next hour, investigative reporter Cheryl Jones joins us as she talks with a forensic scientist. Fascinating discussion. And then we'll have open lines with Cheryl at the end of the program tonight. We're going to come back in a moment with Dr. Judith Orloff and take final calls as well here on Coast to Coast. And welcome back. Dr. Judith Orloff is with us, psychiatrist, empath, and author. And Judith, I said to get your books at Amazon. Any other places?
You could get them on my website, which is drjudithorloff.com. You can get them on Barnes & Noble or order them anywhere.
Do empaths have a darker side to themselves?
Yes, definitely.
Well, they
empaths
do.
Have a darker side because they get caught up in fear and worry, and just become overwhelmed with their emotions so that they're not able to feel the happiness that they deserve.
Now, is that darker side very dark?
Everybody has a dark side. Carl Jung, the psychiatrist, called it the shadow side. Everybody has a shadow side they have to deal with. And empaths, you know, really have to deal with their own shadow side, perhaps, you know, some unique qualities, you know, such as their depth of intuition. So they use intuition for the good. You don't want to use intuition for the bad or for manipulation, but intuition can be used in many ways. So I guess the darker side would be not using it for the good, and the darker side might be punishing yourself or beating yourself up when you deserve to be treated with kindness. Empaths tend to be really hard on themselves. And so it's important that you don't let that dark side come out. Because empaths might get into feeling they're unworthy or that they're ashamed of their abilities or that, you know, they can't really speak up. I consider that, you know, sort of a dark side or the shadow side because it doesn't let them come into their light. You know, they need to come into their light. Everyone listening tonight, come into your empathy, your light, your gifts. And don't hide them or feel that there's anything to be ashamed of.
Let's go back to the phone. Sherry's with us, Long Beach, California. Hi, Sherry. Go ahead.
Hi, George. How are you doing tonight?
Okay. Thanks for holding on so long.
Oh, you're so welcome. I would just want to say, Dr. Orloff, I'm as an empath and probably a mega empath, I want to thank you for this topic tonight. I want to say... I want to make a brief statement, and then I have a question.
Sure.
I grew up with a mom who's a complete narcissist, and the good news for everybody is it skips a generation. I was the crybaby. I had horses, and anyways, I feel like I'm a physical empath. My mom was very narcissistic, and right now I'm taking care of 5 stray cats. One of them, you know, I have to go feed right now. One of them was banging on the doorway. I was on hold. I also want to say the difference between compassion and empathy is this, and no direct offense to the two previous callers. Compassion is, oh, I care about that situation. That's sad. And then you walk away. As an empath and a mega empath, of which I am, because I have been secluded now for about 3 years in a 5x16 room, which is fine. You take on what you not only feel for them, it goes into you. I've been shaking right now. You have described me to the T, Dr. Orloff. And if I could, I'd like to remain on hold so maybe I could talk to you. Because, and on the other thing too, on the Chinese side, I went into a Chinese restaurant and I told this woman, I said, God, I feel too much. This is when I was much younger. You know, you forget what qualities you have. And she said, why? I said, because something upset me outside and I was right in it. And she said, no, that's a gift. And quite frankly, I feel like it's a curse because it's debilitating. The other thing is about like my adrenaline, when it just impedes me. I can't move. Because I feel so much. I mean, it's horrible, you know, and I wonder if there's any relief.
And what we're going to do for you, Sherry, is we're going to get your phone number and pass it on to Dr. Orloff, okay? Because she can't talk to you because she's not here with us. She's way over where she is. Go ahead, Judith.
First of all, you know, I just want to say thank you for sharing your heart and how honestly you shared your mega empathic abilities, and also for that distinction between compassion and empathy. That's something I've been thinking about a lot lately, and I think you really nailed it. So, yes, there is a difference between compassion and empathy. But in terms of how to calm yourself and bring yourself down, you know, there was another listener that I talked about putting the hand over the heart and soothe yourself. Now, you are very emotional. You're an emotional empath as well as other kinds of empaths. But it's very important that you calm everything down and you decrease the stimulation and you stop thinking so much. You try and just stay in the moment, rather than thinking about all the things that happened. You're trying to assimilate too much, so you go on sensory overload. And so to simplify, put your hand on your heart, just take a breath and bring yourself in the moment and know that all is well in this moment. And don't try and figure everything out just to give yourself a little relief. So, you know, that's a start. And in the Empath Survival Guide, I talk about a lot of different strategies you can use to ground yourself as an empath. That would be very useful for you.
Okay, stay on the line, Sherry. We'll get your number and we'll pass it on to Dr. Orloff, and maybe you two can connect later on tomorrow or the next day or whatever. Let's go to San Francisco. Carlos, welcome to the show. Hi, Carlos.
Good evening and good morning, Mr. Norrie and Dr. Orloff.
Hi, Carlos.
Hi. Let me just state that I'm an empath, and I want to contextualize, and I'm going to make some disclosures. And the reason I'm going to make these disclosures is, while I don't prefer to share too much about my life, the reason I'm going to do it is if anybody else can be helped by it. I'm an empath, and first of all, I just want to say that I am so appreciative of Thomas from La Jolla. I'm always very edified by when he calls because of his just expansive knowledge and his articulation of his points, and it's a real asset, just as many other callers. And my heart goes out, and my appreciation goes out to Lisa and to Sherry. I totally understand. And then let me make a point about what president would have been an empath. This person did not become an empath, but the person that came to mind would have been Robert F. Kennedy, Senator Robert F. Kennedy, as a potential empathic president. That having been said, I also want to make a statement that Dr. Orloff offered with regards to, is it nature or is it nurture? You know, I'm 58 years old, and I have an ACE score, so I'm going to use some references that your guest, Dr. Orloff, must know, of a 10. And so I grew up with complex PTSD. I am an ACONAS. That's an ACONAS. That's an acronym for Adult Child of Narcissistic Abuse Syndrome. And I grew up in a time, in a generation, I'm in my late 50s, so a lot of things weren't known. And I did not learn until 3 years ago that my brother was on the autistic spectrum. And because of the age difference between he and I, 14 months, and my sister, which would have been almost 4 years, my early childhood, up to the age of about 3-4, was void of any attunement. So I have a mother that's a paranoid schizophrenic, and I have a father that's a cerebral, malignant, covert narcissist. He has since passed away the last couple of years. And I learned a lot from Dr. Elin Golem, who wrote a book in 1991 called Trapped in the Mirror, Adult Children of Narcissistic and Their Struggle for Self. And essentially what happens with these kinds of people like myself is we are introjected with the worthlessness of the narcissistic parent, that we're never able to really fully evolve into our own sense of self. So I believe that I was born with sensitivity, but I believe that my abusive environment, void of attunement, compelled me to become overly sensitive, where I had to have, through hypervigilance, this sense of what are other people feeling, in part because I wanted to anticipate how to care about somebody that was in my family system. But also, the trade-off to that is I'm trying to mitigate or evade any potential threat to my own safety. And therein lies an answer or an insight to the question that you posed, George, which is there a dark side? The dark side, at least for me, is this potential sense of always wanting to know if I'm a fraud. That having been said, Dr. Orloff mentioned something that was very interesting, and that is what she said is, you know, there's these things that they develop, and believe it or not, and you'll notice this, George, in my past calls, there's a lot of stammering when I call, and I actually disclosed this earlier to Tommy, is that I suffer with extreme social anxiety. Now, you wouldn't know this over the phone.
You do a good job.
Person. What's that?
You do a great job.
Yeah, but in person, I'm an absolute mess. And so, you know, this is the thing, is that there's this trade-off. And one of the things to Lisa with regards to being married to a narcissist, not that I have been, but they really can't stand going gray rock. So you asked the question, George, is there any way of upsetting a narcissist? And the thing about narcissists is they're so obsessed with control because their inner self is just completely worthless. And so what happens is they target the child that they actually can sense as the empath. And the reason is because the narcissist parent is void of any empathic responses, that they actually resent the child that's the empath. So what they do is they imbue all their worthlessness in the narcissistic, in the empathic child, because that's what they lack, and they actually resent that. So my question, having contextualized and sharing a lot about myself with a lot of interpretation, but if I hope it helps anybody else in your listening audience, is that I wonder, and this is what I pose to Dr. Olaf. Number one, is the reason for the empath, how much of it is influenced by this over hypervigilance? And number two, there's a gentleman on YouTube, and I'm not going to represent his website, but he's a PhD psychologist from New Zealand. And he talked about the four states of empathy, and he talked about the psychopathology of the empath. And he described it as either A, you're an overgrown child, two, you're an underdeveloped adult, three, there's a warrior component, and four, there's an immense critic. And that's what I wanted to contribute to tonight's discussion. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I can address your question in that over-vigilance, hyper-vigilance is a very common aspect of being an empath, where you track your environment to see if you're safe all the time. And that hyper-vigilance is very common, especially with the history that you described of the narcissistic abuse from your parents. You know, God bless you. You know, you've articulated it so beautifully. And I just want to, you know, say bravo for surviving it and being able to share and help others.
Judith, how does a parent know if their child, a little tiny kid, is an empath?
Yes, well, empaths have a way of really showing themselves. They're intuitive. They often, you know, like to be in nature. They don't like being around a lot of kids. They might have one best friend. They like to observe things. They like to have their creative time with their imaginative friends that they create with them. And so it's, you know, they're not rushing to video games. They're not rushing to sports teams. And so you have to really look at, you know, what a child's predisposition is, and if they seem empathic and sensitive and intuitive, you want to help them bring that out. And so it's very different because empath children prefer one-to-one, or they like, you know, being alone, and they get overwhelmed or overstimulated by too many play dates in a day. So it's a beautiful thing to raise an empathic child and to help that child embrace his or her gifts. You know, as opposed to the last caller where he was raised by, you know, narcissistic parents who weren't able to give him that.
Judith, we got a minute left. How do people sign up for your course, your online course?
Yeah, you could go to my website, the Empath Survival Guide online course, and it's there, and also my Empath Support newsletter that's free. If you'd like to get information about empaths monthly, go to drjudithorloff.com. And just explore, and all kinds of books and resources for you that are free.
Is the course through your online system, or is it like Zoom? How do you do it?
It's through my, there's a link, I do it with Sounds True, and there's a link on my site that links up with the Sounds True system, and you sign up there.
All right, great. Thanks, Judith. Keep in touch with us. I always love having you on the program. The books include Thriving as an Empath, The Empath Survival Guide. Truly remarkable. It really is. I'm going to take that study course and that quiz that she's got available in that book. We're going to come back with Cheryl Jones, our investigative reporter, as she talks with a forensic scientist.